So what about Let's Get Ready to Rumble? What if I just do the Michael Buffer Let's Get Ready to Rumble thing?
That's not funny.
I mean,
no, but it's exciting. It lets everybody know that it's about to begin. If when you say that and you do the Let's Get Ready, you know, no, that's not the
Sammy.
Thing.
Come on, who's gonna laugh at Let's Get Ready to Rumble? Like if you were to like twist it around or something, like Let's Get Ready to Tech Baconal, or
that's terrible.
Something.
Mine was just the regular
See,
thing.
Jamie's
better.
Not here. I'm not good with the puns. It doesn't work.
Yeah, you're not. Don't try and be doing her. Okay, so what if we do the Madagascar thing? You know what I mean? Well, the Chris Rock?
I have no idea what you're talking about.
What do you mean you have no idea what I'm talking about?
I have no idea.
The song that he sings, it's everywhere. It's the number one movie this weekend. You know?
No, I'm not. What?
Circus, Afro circuit. Nothing? You don't know anything about this?
I think you need to mix it up and make it a Tech Bacon relatable song.
Facebook, smart glass, Facebook.
This is Tech Bacon, a weekly conversation about the latest in technology, new media, and random foodstuffs. I'm your host, Scott Gold, and this is episode number
51.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Tech Bacon. It's been a few weeks. Jamie Dooner is still out of town trouncing around Europe on his honeymoon, but with me I have Sam Woolman.
Well, playing the part of Jamie Dooner, Sam Woolman.
Is Samuel Woolman.
Yeah. At least I'll try for at least one pun.
He has no beard, but he does wear glasses.
I do. I do from time to time.
On occasion. Yeah. And you have been known to been suggested that you are brothers with Jamie.
Yeah, we basically are. So we're keeping it in the family here, folks.
So thank you, Sammy, for joining us on this Sunday recording of Tech Bacon.
I'm always happy to be the Tech Bacon pinch hitter utility infielder. I like that status.
And we like having your opinion here.
Well, thank you. Thank you. So we have a long list here today,
We do have a long list here today.
So where are we starting?
We are going to start with what I have been First, I'm just going to throw it out there. E3 has been going on in Los Angeles, big gaming convention. We're going to talk a tiny bit about that. I'm not a big gamer. You're not a huge gamer.
No.
But there was some interesting things, kind of non-gaming, that came out of E3, so we'll talk about that. But the biggest thing is, and I mentioned it the other week, the Windows 8 preview came out, and I have fully installed it on my work day-to-day production laptop.
And how's that going?
I've had it for, I think it's been 2 weeks now, and it's twofold. One, my biggest worry was that I just wasn't going to be able to work, because I had played with an earlier version of it, and I didn't think I would actually be able to do anything. So that wasn't true. I installed it. I was able to make it through my workday, but the reason I was able to make it through my workday is because I primarily stayed in the Windows 7 mode of Windows 8.
Yeah, so you showed me that we did a little demo before we got on the air here, and so you showed me that you can basically pull up your Windows 7 desktop and right. work from there if you so choose.
Right, so like the way they do it is Windows 7 is an app within Windows 8, basically.
You know? Which I guess is the failsafe to make sure that people who have had the reaction that you basically are about to express is...
Yeah.
Is to protect them. So why don't you give everybody the breakdown of what it looks like?
Well, they've had previews out for a while. They haven't changed that much. It looks like Windows Phone, if anybody's seen Windows Phone out there. It's a main screen with a bunch of different panels, and each of the panels is an application, and there's live information that kind of updates. So the weather is updating, or your Facebook updates are updating. The number of emails you have are kind of all in this one screen that you can view. And then when you click on an app, it goes full screen, and you're in that application. One of the biggest problems of the whole thing.
Right, because so what you showed is that you can only have two of those apps open at one time, and you can either have it as one of them is the left quarter panel and and one of them is three quarters of the screen on the right, or vice versa, but otherwise that's it.
Exactly.
And that's a bit of a challenge for someone who's in the workplace. I think it's clearly very app and smartphone targeted,
tablet
and tablet oriented, and that seems to be a huge shift, I think, for the Windows business, because ultimately I think there are a lot of people in the business world that still think that, you know, the Windows and Office suite is the preferred form of business function rather than working on a Mac.
I think that
most people I know in desk jobs like my own,
those fun and exciting desk jobs,
when you really have to be using a lot of different applications. I mean, I switch between Outlook, Word, Excel, you know, PDFs all the time. And
web browser, and
to be able to do that suddenly in a limited environment where you can only have two apps open at one time. I mean, obviously there's an ability to play with that, and maybe people will find that switching between them is easier. But at the moment, it looks like it's a business challenge, and so really that this is a shift on from Windows to becoming more of an entertainment focused.
Yeah.
And almost home-focused.
And I can see that. Like, I can see that working. Like, if you, let's say you had, like, an iMac-type device with Windows 8 sitting in your kitchen, this kind of touchscreen, this kind of interface would be great, you know? But it's like at any point when you're starting to do multitasking, it's terrible. Multitasking on a tablet, great, because multitasking on a tablet doesn't exist right now. So if you had those features where you can have a quarter of the screen be another app on like an iPad, imagine that. Amazing.
But I'll play devil's advocate with you for a minute. I think that the intent, which is debatable, the merits are debatable, but the intent appears to be that you actually keep that home screen up with everything that you can see
right.
at all times.
That
you're always returning to home, so you
correct.
Have those applications running. So you can see Facebook updates, you can see Twitter updates, you can see text updates.
Right.
Because I think that that's the intent. So you used a great example. If you're, you know, let's say you're having a house party for people and you're the one cooking dinner, and you know, people are always running late. People have to ask for directions if they haven't been to your place in a while. If you have a tablet next to the stove,
fantastic.
That's great because you can see if anybody's texted you. You can see if anybody's asking you for information. You
totally.
Can also look at your recipe and click back and forth between it, and that's fine.
Right. And the big, I think the biggest mistake with this is that it shouldn't be replacing Windows 7. They should have come out with just Windows Metro as another operating system for a different purpose.
Yes. I think you've hit it, but it's so what's interesting is, and maybe their point is that, well, you still have Windows 7.
I think that's short term. I think they're only keeping that in there for legacy stuff. I think if they could, they wouldn't have had that. Like, I think the only reason it's in there is so that older programs can still run.
You know, the other interesting thing is that while I think that it's a shit, they've clearly made a decision to shift.
Oh yeah, and it's a big gamble. It's a huge, huge risk.
But the interesting thing about the shift is that while I understand that it's supposed to be friendly and look a little bit more fun,
yeah.
I actually find looking at it, while it's fun to see
more
on
confusing.
The well, it's all the different shapes of things,
right? They're not,
and it's sort of kind of it's almost a little too cutesy.
It's cutesy, yeah.
And instead, I would rather it be focused, where if you can determine the shape. So that way I can have uniform squares or rectangles, but it doesn't appear that you can do that.
No, you can't.
And so that for me, I'm such a OCD symmetrical person, that would actually be the thing that would drive me the craziest is I want everything to be in a nice order.
Yeah.
And there it's this sort of intentionally like jumbled thing.
Right.
And that's clearly the vibe that they're going for, which to
me
is,
can you imagine?
Like, to me, that's an old person trying to be fun.
To be hip and cool.
I feel like that's sort of the way that it looks to me. And
Steve
that's the way
Ballmer is not a young dude anymore who runs Microsoft and Windows division.
Yeah. I just think, you know, young people know what's hip and cool, and trying to emulate it is very difficult.
It's very true. It's very true. And like, you know, Brian and I had a conversation about this the other day, and we're just like, we can see a future where, like, I can't see your company or my company or like any company switching to this at all. Period. They would freak out.
Well, it's not business.
It's not business.
No top level executives would ever use something like this.
No way.
Outside of a few select businesses, you know, architecture, design, anybody that's in that kind of world, in a very creative world, maybe.
And the weird thing
is,
like,
people still have to multitask between, you know, multiple documents, for lack of a better word, open in a certain application, or multiple applications open that you need to cross-reference information. And unless they find a way to do that easily, I think it's not going to have a business life.
It's a good concept for small screen content, because it's not like when people are in the offices, they have these large monitors now. That's the norm. The small monitors don't exist. Large widescreen monitors exist. The reason large screen monitors exist is so you can have multiple windows going at the same time.
And you know, do you know what? Here's my, I think my best
thus,
review of
Windows.
My best review of Windows 8 is that it's somebody who actually has a good idea in trying to transition the way that a business and personal computing world looks, but they did a bad job of it. And that right. There's going to be some guy, some girl, some young person out that there is going to look out at it and says, oh,
this well, is what
I
they
see
were trying to do.
I see what they were doing. I mean, it's the Zuckerberg, you know, oh, Harvard connection, that's bad, but I have a better idea.
Right.
Somebody's going to look at Windows 8 and say, oh, well, if this is actually what everybody wants, I can do that.
Well, you know, who I see benefiting the most from this, funny enough, is Apple, because they've been kind of transitioning Mac OS X to be more like the iPad. And I think when they see this potentially fall really hard on its face, they may readjust.
Yes.
And they wouldn't have come out with that full-featured version of Mac yet.
They might.
You know, because they've been transitioning to that too. On the newest version of Mac, you have a button that brings you to an iPad-like app screen. And
yes,
you know,
yes, there is an app screen.
Right. And like everyone's been going towards this, and I get it. For tablets and for phones, but there is a work productivity area that is very big in the world. It's a very big segment that this doesn't work for.
Yeah, I need to be able to swap back and forth between Outlook, Word, and Excel in a rapid and
sometimes see them at the same time.
In a fluid fashion. And if I can't do that, and I'm actually new to Windows 7, despite the fact that Windows 7 is not new, my new gig has got me running that. I was always on XP before. And Windows 7 is actually great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
On a business level. They've really done fabulous with the windowing and the way that you can pull things up and move within, you know,
where you have four things open in one app.
If you hover over your Word icon on your pinned down basement line, you can see every document that you've got open.
It's fantastic.
You can suddenly just glance into one if you hover over it and then move on to the next one. It's a fabulous. It's made my working that much better.
And that's what upsets me so much, because they nailed Windows 7. I have loved working in Windows 7. They just did it. They did everything they've been trying to do, and they've just like nailed it. You know.
So
what I mean?
so basically, Tech Bacon is not not buying Windows 8 stock is what we're trying to say, folks. All right, what do we got?
All right, so. Speaking of Facebook, because you were talking about Facebook, there's a couple of new features in the Facebook realm that kind of popped up, and I just wanted to touch on them because I thought they were interesting. Nothing like, you know, earth shattering or anything. So one of them is when you're using Facebook now, and you can do these social readers. Have you seen that, where it says so and so read this article or so and so?
Yeah.
So now they've got this 10-second rule built into it. So if you go on something and you're not on there longer than 10 seconds, it won't post it. So it's going to reduce the clutter of that, you know, that you see in that feed constantly. With it's not every time you click; it's every time you actually read or listen. Or if you listen to 3 seconds of a song, it's not going to post it. I think that's nice.
I think it's nice. Although I'm just as to those social reader applications.
You don't like them.
I don't want people to know what I'm reading. Like I want to click on USA Today to Kim Kardashian buys Kanye West a Ferrari for his birthday. I don't want everybody to know, despite the fact that I just told everybody here, I don't want everybody to know that I'm reading that. But I like to read that every once in a while. It's interesting.
Right.
I work in entertainment. Funny. I'm a sucker for bad pop culture stories.
That's true.
So just in case anybody was wondering, allegedly Kim Kardashian bought Kanye West a Ferrari for his 35th birthday.
That's good to know.
FYI.
Different podcast.
Different podcast. That's why I gave it as a quick FYI. It's
Thank
an
you.
Aside.
Just over, you know, so now we know a little bit more
okay,
about
Okay, so they've
Sam.
Cleaned up social reading. What else is going on Facebook this week?
They also launched this App Store, which is basically an App Store. It's going to be in iOS and Android and on Facebook that you can buy approved or download approved apps that work that are somewhat integrated with Facebook.
That's smart.
It's very smart on their part. And so, like, if you look at it, you know, you look at iHeartRadio is in there and Stitcher and all these things.
I mean, they clearly need a business model that is outside of advertising revenue. So that's important for them.
Yeah.
And now as a public company, they need a stronger actual business model other than the fact that they are the leading social networking site in the world.
Right, exactly. And it's going to be all of a sudden going to pop in on everyone's phone and on everyone's Facebook. On the left-hand side, you're going to see App Center. And, you know.
Is it up now?
I believe it is up now. I think it just launched Friday, you know. So it's all the apps that are in it, though, are related to Facebook. So whether right. they use Facebook in the app or it just authenticates, like I know if you've seen, you can log into things with sure. Facebook now. Those are all the kind of
Spotify,
apps.
Spotify, for example.
Right, exactly. So curious to see how it takes off. I mean, it says launching with 600 apps, so it's not a lot. However,
when you have a billion people logging in on a daily basis to check out what's going on Facebook, you've got a good chance that if those apps are very functional, which my guess is that they are, you know, those are things that people are going to check out.
Yeah, I agree. So that was another Facebook thing. And the last Facebook thing was Facebook, they're improving how they're working with Twitter, which I thought was pretty cool. So like, you know, when you put hashtags or @ for people, it's going to actually relate them more into the Facebook post. So like before, if you were to, let's say I was to post, my Twitter account, my Facebook account were linked, right?
Right.
And I'm going to post something from Facebook that says, Sam Woolman hashtag is not @ bastard monkey, you know, and I was going
right.
which that's Jamie's Twitter
right.
handle.
Yes. That meant something only to me, to no one who's listening but me.
Well, everyone knows Jamie is bastard monkey because he says it at the end of every show.
Oh, well, then that meant something to everyone who listens to this thing and to me.
And to you. Or actually, if I were to say @ 647 is not @ bastard monkey.
Oh, okay.
That would only be relevant because nobody here knows that.
No.
But now they do.
Okay. So why don't you explain what this is.
So I have my Twitter account linked to my Facebook. So if I post something on Facebook, it posts to Facebook. Now, like, let's say I post a picture, it would, when it goes to Facebook, it only like pick the link and that's all that would show up. Now, when you post a link to a picture, the picture will actually show up as a little icon in the link on Facebook. So it's okay. kind of more integrating into what you're seeing to make it kind of a fluid experience. It's interesting to see Facebook embracing that as much. I mean, there's always been Twitter integration, but it's really interesting to see that they're doing that.
To see them really try and become friends. Because I don't think they've really been friends.
No, there's always been a tie-in, but they never had.
Yeah.
This is like an open kind of invite to Twitter.
It's an olive branch.
It's a friend request.
You should be ashamed of yourself. Even Jamie D would have left that one alone. Okay, so
do you like that?
What? The connection between Facebook and Twitter?
Well, I was making a joke on the like on Facebook.
Wow, that's two awful ones in a row. Please
stop. Channeling Jamie. I'm trying to channel Jamie
please
here.
Please stop. We talked about this. You can't be Jamie. Jamie is Jamie. That's it. Dooner is Dooner.
But there has to be the spirit of Jamie Dooner.
Let Dooner be Dooner.
I'll try.
Thank you.
But for real, does that even impact you at all as like a normal day-to-day user?
It doesn't. Again, I'm more on the conservative side of my social media use at this point. I find it to be so narcissistic and so excessively public with who you are and what you're doing that I try and be obscure and few and far between with my Facebook and Twitter posting. Like if I'm
right.
taking a trip and a bunch of people know that a friend is getting married, then I'll make a reference to that. And you get a bunch of the people that are,
sure,
you're going to see that weekend,
right,
going to the same wedding you are. Yeah. You get it. You know, that's a great way to get some Facebook traffic or some Twitter traffic. But other than that,
you're not in on it that much.
I like being able to read about my friends, but I just don't. There's something invasive about it that maybe I'm an older person at heart.
No. No.
Who, me?
No. What did you do last night, Sam?
Stayed in. And read.
Stayed in too. Anyway, we're going to seem young with what we're going to talk about next.
Yes, we are. I think this is really exciting too.
This is, to me, this is kind of quote unquote, this is unintentional, game changing. Unintentional pun.
Terrible.
I couldn't help it.
Terrible. So Xbox and Microsoft announced Smart Glass at E3 this week, and we watched a little bit of a demo, and I think I'm going to quote you earlier. It basically acts like a living DVD special features on your tablet or on your phone while you're engaging with your television. So
right.
we saw, you know, you can be watching a TV show on HBO and then an interactive map of where You know, a caravan of cars is driving.
I mean, the
will
big
will pull up on your tablet or on your phone,
in sync with what you're watching.
Yes.
So you're not like clicking around. Like as soon as they move to another location, the map moves to another
right.
location.
It does it. It has a life of its own, and so you could just watch and experience that if you want to.
I mean, how many times are you? And this happens to me all the time. I'm sitting at home, I'm watching something. Oh, who is that? And I pull up IMDb. Right.
Right.
Like they talked about this in the demo. I do that all the time.
Right, and basically, this is almost like a living, breathing VH1 pop-up video.
Yeah, good. That's a good way to.
I think it's
more full featured, but this one
yes,
part of it.
And as it relates to gamers, they showed that you could, you know, design your own plays in Madden game, and then also kind of run your play from your tablet. Stay in the X's and O's mode, make a pass, and then still have the main game up on the main screen, but you're seeing it in that more coaching
right.
designed mode. And I don't play the game enough to know if that's something that's new or not, but it would seem that the interactivity between live on your tablet and live on your screen being two different things has got to be brand new.
I really see this as Microsoft seeing the future of home entertainment. Like I think it's
the future of the way the world is going to connect. That you have multiple devices
doing
all
different
with similar capabilities running different programs that are all like now Facebook and Twitter interacting with each other more and more. I think that it's
sure.
I think that also it's actually a nice connection here because from story to story that showing two companies that haven't necessarily always embraced each other, now they're doing that. And I think because that's the way all of this stuff is going to work. Everything is going to be Minority Report always had what looked to me like right. a very real and possible
future,
but our lifetime future.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like, you know, I think the year is further out, but
it didn't feel like the, you know, like 20, it, you know,
yeah,
2099.
I mean, I think it's 2051 or something like that in that movie, but that seems possible that we could be walking down the street and you've got a retina scan and you get an advertisement that shows only to you. And maybe it doesn't show up as a hologram as you're walking along
maybe
the street.
Maybe it shows up on your phone.
But maybe it shows up on your phone.
Or on your tablet.
Or on your tablet.
I mean, I see people walking around with their tablets all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. and that's, I think that that's a real possibility. And this smart glass seems to be the first step of that. And actually, Siri also. And I think that's interesting too, that it's going to be different companies that come up with the technology, but it's eventually
right.
technology that everyone's going to use. I mean, you better believe that the Microsoft folks are going to be working on their own, you know, voice
they
intelligence
already have it.
System.
It's already part of Kinect with this system.
Exactly.
They're already,
well,
they're already
there,
building
there
it in. And you know, what I think is so interesting is I am seeing a future where Microsoft is not, you don't think Microsoft and Windows. I see a future where you think Microsoft and you think home entertainment. Because
yes.
this is such a big idea. And, you know, like Google was trying to get the web on your screen and there's all these smart apps on the screen. No, no, no. It's about having the secondary device. That is,
well, look,
that
maybe,
is that's the revolution.
Maybe
I think.
And maybe you know, maybe again to play devil's advocate to our criticism of Windows 8 at the top of the show, maybe they know something we don't. Maybe they
well,
maybe
true.
They see maybe this is the vision of we know that this is the way that most of these devices that we sell, most of these devices that we sell software for, this is the direction that they're going, and we've seen it first.
Yeah.
And so we're going to go get there first.
Right.
You know, in the way that Jobs did with the MP3 player, maybe this is what they're doing with really creating a very friendly, easy to use, big picture, you know, because
yeah.
that's the thing. You can only have two apps up on your screen and apps automatically open up full screen in Windows 8.
True.
Maybe that's actually better because it
for this kind of thing.
For home entertainment.
Right. You know what's smart about also what they're doing with this? They're not saying, oh, only for Windows 8 tablets. No, 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 no.
No.
It's Windows 8, Android, and iPhone. They're saying this
yeah.
is a platform for the living room. This is not about our hardware. This is not about
no, it's very smart.
Our, I mean, they're creating.
But again, I think that's a theme here today is that kind of program exclusivity is no longer going to be a part of the world that we
not.
Live in on a technology basis.
I
it
hope
just,
not.
Well, it can't be.
Yeah.
It can't be because all of these, nobody's ever going to come up with it all on their own.
Right.
And that's the thing. And I think as soon as all of these big companies embrace that, then you're going to have lots of working together.
I mean, I think, like, can you imagine? I'm thinking of, like, all these crazy things. Can you imagine, as a sports fan, and I'm not a big sports guy, and I don't like NASCAR racing, right?
Right.
But imagine you're watching NASCAR on the TV, and on your smart screen, you have the in camera from inside the car.
You could change to the lead driver as soon as a lead change happens, or as a lead change
that?
Is about. It's crazy.
Or even football. Eventually, they're going to have a little freaking camera in the helmet.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you can get the bird's eye view from your smart screen and have the wide angle on the big TV.
Right, when you can watch Tom Brady throw a touchdown or watch him get sacked or so on and so forth. It's pretty crazy.
I mean, I think the possibilities are just so big with this. And this wasn't even a gaming thing. And this is what came out at the gaming convention. And it's because they're using Xbox, which is, it's like the Trojan horse into the living room.
Yes.
It's kind of mind-blowing to me. I really, like, the more I think about it, the more I talk about it, it just seems so smart.
It's exciting. I think for me, we grew up with the Jetsons, where we wanted to have jetpacks and
right.
and flying cars, and the fact that we're now in a day and age where some of this stuff is starting to happen. You know, there's a band that's out there called We Were Promised Jetpacks. And I feel like while they're right that we were and we don't have them, things like this are making it seem like we're on our way to really getting to some place that looks like a very different world than when we grew up.
Totally agree. So I mean, this is going to come out soon, and so I'm really, it's almost something that will make me buy to be honest, an Xbox. I have to be honest, it's that compelling to me. Okay. The next thing in the technological landscape is not as fun, but interesting, and it leads into television. I think this is a natural progression from the smart television to what's been going on with Dish Network. So Dish Network released a new device called the Hopper. And the Hopper has the ability, the biggest thing is the Hopper has the ability to record 4 stations at the same time and automatically cut out the commercials.
Well, it lets you hop by them.
Hop by them, but it doesn't.
You can see them. It does record them, I believe, doesn't
but,
it?
But it does record them. But it actually, when it hits it, it skips to the beginning of the show. It intelligently skips,
right?
Like, so, it doesn't. You don't see a fast forward,
right?
You actually see it pop over. So
it hops.
It right. Thus the name. I don't know. Have you seen the commercials for the Hopper? By the way,
yes, they're pretty funny.
I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. No, it's all these guys with Boston accents, right?
It's confusing, but it's
the
funny.
Hopper. You got the Hopper,
yeah,
right.
Yeah, they didn't. It's Dish does itself a bit of a disservice on branding, but there's a huge thing that I think has been looming over the television business for a long time, which is as soon as TiVo and DVR became really regular household tools,
right?
I think that this issue that Dish has now brought to the forefront,
it's a big issue.
Well, it's an issue that's been looming, which is, as soon as you know that you can fast forward through commercials, people aren't really watching them. Yes, are they seeing logos pass by?
Right.
Do some people really like commercials? Yeah, some of our friends do and talk about them a lot. But I think most people, you know, you live in a busy world. If you can watch, you know, the 22 minutes or the 44 minutes of a half hour or hour show respectively in 22 or 44 minutes,
right. You want to do that
because it allows you to watch more television. However, the problem is the television financing is based upon advertising. And so what this is doing is, I think, really to the chagrin of anyone who is in the television content business, it is accelerating the discussion of, well, how do we do television advertising without commercials?
Right.
And I think that the thing that I've been expecting for a long time is to see what happens for season premieres and series premieres. Lots of times you see season premieres and series premieres where there will be this episode is brought to you by Ford.
Right. And there's a Ford, big thing in the front.
And so Ford, you know, so it's commercial free, but they get to flash a logo in corners at multiple moments throughout the show.
They do a big tag at the beginning,
and they do a big tag at the end.
Yeah,
and I think that that's ultimately what's going to happen. And so, the question is: does that model allow network television to be sustainable? And I think that probably the answer has been
no,
because otherwise the networks might have just
started
already started to really do that. But look, as to the advertisers have the money to spend, and they need to spend the money because they've already deemed it necessary to spend all of the television money that they spend to be able to successfully advertise their products and run their business. So if you tell somebody, hey, instead of having multiple spots across multiple shows, you're going to have, you know, maybe it'll become four corners.
They have to change the way they think. That's
both,
really
both the advertisers and the and people that produce television
because
shows.
At
and
the
that's
end of
unfortunate
the-
because it, look, it's a model that has really been
you know what's funny though? You know what's funny? Because it has been a model for such a long time, but it wasn't
originally.
the original model of television.
Right. The original model of television was this show brought to you by Geritol, and you would actually see a Geritol spokesman, and there would be sometimes a live television commercial on the stage just to the side.
Do you know what at what point it became the regular commercials?
I'm sure they do, but I'm sure there's a good history of television or even television advertising that would book that's out there that talks about it, but I don't know the timing. My guess is at some point in the 60s is when it happened. My guess would be maybe earlier than later, because I think it
late
was
late 50s, maybe.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be.
It's interesting. I mean, it just brings it all into this because that had to be rethought at a certain point.
Right.
And it seems like they're fighting. You know what bothers me, though, about so much about the suit? Like, I'm going to read one of the quotes from the suit because they're rolling in two things that I don't think have anything to do with each other. And it bothers me because they're doing, you know, they say Fox in the suit says, "We were given no choice but to file suit against one of our largest distributors, Dish Network, because of their surprising move to market a product with the clear goal of violating copyrights and destroying the fundamental underpinnings of the broadcast television ecosystem." Okay, that's what I have issue with. In that sentence, they're combining copyright infringement with destroying the fundamental underpinnings of broadcast television ecosystem. They can't say that they're infringing on copyright without saying that every DVR or VCR, any recording television product, is in copying.
I'm not sure what the copyright claim is.
I think
honestly.
That is it. I think that it's being recorded and disseminated in a different way. Is that true? They're not changing it. The device is doing it, so they're still recording it in whole.
Well, what's difficult is that they are not changing the actual content of the show.
Right.
The IP that is owned by the broadcaster is not being changed.
They're also not changing the broadcast, quote unquote.
That'll be the rub. Are they altering the broadcast? Are they changing the broadcast signal? Because I actually if you listen to whenever you hear, I feel like it happens more on sporting events than it does after regular television shows, but you'll hear, there's always a league announcement saying you can't, any misappropriation or rebroadcast.
Yeah. Any live television has that.
Yeah. So when you hear that, I think a lot of times you'll hear the phrase broadcast signal.
Yes, they do say that. Right.
And so I think that the claim that the networks will probably make is that by interrupting, they'll probably use that word, that that there's been an interruption in the broadcast signal. It's if you say it's one thing to record the signal in its entirety,
right,
and allow people on a
to do
video on
want.
Demand basis to rewind, fast forward, play, and pause. But it's another thing to actually remove content from the broadcast signal. And so the argument that Dish will make is content isn't being removed. It's being skipped over. It's still
there,
all there and
the
recorded
device.
If people want to watch it.
Right.
But
it's
that,
a slippery slope.
It's going to be a challenging
it's
legal
so
argument. Yes, it's small. Look, this is what I've...
Yes, Sam is in the legal world. He works for a prominent entertainment company, so you know.
But I'm not an attorney. So I hear these arguments made, and so I'm aware of them. But I think that those.
I think you have a unique knowledge of this situation.
I think those are the arguments that'll be made back and forth. Is that one will say that the broadcast signal has been altered or interrupted, and as a or manipulated, whatever the word will be. To show that it is not what was originally transmitted,
right?
And the other side will say, well, that's not true. Broadcast signal is recorded in its entirety intact, We haven't deleted it. We're just allowing people the ability to pass by it.
Right. And I think
it's a more efficient fast forward button.
I wonder, like, here's what I wonder, because Dish is tied with their device, right? Dish provides the satellite service and they also provide the device. I'm curious if a company such as TiVo or another DVR company came out with the same functionality where they are just a device without any satellite company, without any cable company, would they be as concerned? I think they would.
They are, because because the key phrase, regardless of the legal argument that's made by the company, the key phrase in here is that there is now the impending destruction of the fundamental underpinnings of the broadcast television ecosystem.
Right.
And I think that that's something that now, unfortunately, I actually think for the television broadcasters, they have to reassess the model, and they have to find a way to make the model work, and hopefully for all of us that like TV they'll find a way. Yeah, because eventually, look, even if Dish loses the suit, eventually somebody's going to figure out how to do this. Eventually
there's always going to be somebody to figure it out.
This was an apparent eventuality for over 10 years. As soon as TiVo was present and everybody knew what a TiVo was, This has been a looming
pending
problem.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even if the device didn't come out, some dude is going to release a easy do it yourself way for anybody and their brother to be able to do it.
Right, almost like an infomercial kind of item.
Yeah, yeah,
like a drop stop, if you will.
Exactly.
Go to buydropstop.com.
Promoting our boy's product. So one last thing about this, which I think is just kind of interesting, you know. Actually, I totally lost my train of thought what I was going to say.
Don't know what you're going to say. I guess it's worth noting, since we're talking about Dish, that I'm a Dish subscriber.
Wait, can I stop? I remember. Okay. Don't forget it. No, it was what I was going to say was that this fundamental underpinnings of the broadcast television ecosystem shows me how much they don't realize that there is still a broadcast television ecosystem, but there really isn't a broadcast television ecosystem. It is all through cable and satellite and internet, and it's brought to you. It's not the same. We're broadcasting a signal and showing a commercial.
Well, I think
it's content.
I think you're being I think you're being a little too literal.
No, I know.
Coming from a guy who's very literal, I think you're being a little too literal.
I am being too literal, but I think they have. They're not that model of showing a commercial during a live broadcast has completely changed.
Yes.
And I think they're still in that mindset of showing a commercial in the middle of this thing that they're putting out there in real time, you know, which just is not there anymore.
It's going to change. The one thing that proves that they can solve the problem is the broadcast of World Cup and Olympic soccer.
Right.
Because World Cup and Olympic soccer, they don't cut away except at halftime. And there's logos in the corners.
There's
logos on the scoreboard, yeah.
and the audience is huge.
Soccer is the biggest sport in the
Massive.
World. You know,
the
most watched sport in worldwide. You know, the United States has warmed up over our lifetimes, but is still not quite registered it as this is actually the number one sport in the world.
Yeah, good
but
point.
I actually think we're going to get there, but. When you watch a soccer game, it's fine. So if they can broadcast Olympic and World Cup soccer on American television, they can find a way
to figure it out
to make it work.
Yeah. And you were saying you're a Dish subscriber.
Oh, the other thing I was going to say about Dish is that Dish is in this battle with AMC. So we're about to we're about to lose AMC, and there's a big
I keep seeing the ad campaign
thing about
Mad
it.
Man.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if my Mad Men is going to. I don't know when it's supposed to take place, but I'm not sure if I'm going to record the Mad Men.
Finale?
I don't know if I get the Mad Men finale tonight. I don't know when it was supposed to happen. I don't like that. it's a little scary.
Well, let me know. I'll keep it recorded for you.
Please do, because I may not be able to watch it. And I would say, oh, well, I could just watch it online because I have Dish on. Oh, no, that's not going to work. So I don't know if AMC runs reruns online of their Night
Dish
Before
is,
episodes.
But Dish is gutsy.
Yeah, I mean,
they're picking fights.
Well, I think you have to be in this world. They're trying to be competitive, and they're raising issues. I don't know if they're good issues, but they're raising issues. The AMC issue is just corporate fighting.
Yeah, that happens all the time.
But the Hopper thing, I think, is a very interesting issue. that I'm curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah, me too. I'm very, because it has far-reaching implications, so I'm very curious.
Yeah, it's going to change. I mean, ultimately, we're going to the model of television that we're in now is not the model of television I think that will be around 10 years from now.
And the question is,
does it change 10 years from now, 8 years from now, 3 years from now, or a lot sooner than that?
I mean, like if this suit goes through, and let's say the broadcast networks lose, TV as we know it changes that day,
right? It does. Right, because every budget for every show changes, and because the financial model is new, and so it's interesting. I think it's funny because the history of television has impacted the world, and certainly the United States, in the way that we all connect with each other.
Yeah.
Before there were social networks,
was very true.
You know, the evolution of television compared to radio and print was a big deal in the way to get into that many people's homes. I mean, that's the way it's always talked about too, is how many homes does a cable service penetrate into?
Right.
We're always talking about that. And so it's a way that we're connected. And this is just, it's a big deal for all of us to change. And that's something that society and corporations don't like. They don't like to change.
they don't like change.
No, this is and that's why, as to you referring to, you think they're holding on to it. Of course they are, because it's worked and it's made them a lot of money. Networks make money.
Right.
They want it to stay the same because they know how it works. What if we make less money in the new model? That's the fear.
Sure, and that's simple.
It's totally that simple. And you know what? That's a reason. In that case, that is a very reasonable fear, because you've got a model. You know what everybody, you know what all your employees should get paid. You know what your chief executive should get paid. You know how it all is supposed to work. And this might upend it all, and it might really, really change things. Hopefully if it changes things, it changes them for the better, because I think that, you know, anybody that's listening to this show is somebody who not only enjoys, you know, technology and how we all interact with it, but they enjoy entertainment.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of what's going on and everything that we've talked about today,
it's very tied in.
Yes.
And technology and the entertainment and the media.
And it's become more so in this digital age.
Totally.
And that's cool. We all like that. We all like that you've got, you know, HBO Go, and that you can watch an ESPN game on your phone, and all of these companies that work so hard to allow you to connect, to allow you to move the media around and really enjoy it. That's what they want you to do. And so these are the people that help us out. So, you know, and especially somebody who works in media, I want this all to work out well, because
benefits, if they figure out a new way and
if they figure out
to continue to sustain, even if it's different, it does benefit everybody.
Right. Yeah. And so that's what we all want. And so that's the only thing that scares me about seeing something like this, is I actually think that a suit like this is scary, because it means that there's always the possibility that for a while it changes and it's not for the better.
Yeah, true.
And that's very true. That's something that we as a consumer and we as a viewer, it's like, oh wait, you know, I'm not going to get to see my favorite shows, or
I'm
going to have to watch them in a different way, or run.
This is the kind of experience.
This is the moment. This is actually, I think, important to say. This is the moment where, you know, look, your broadcast half hour, you've got 22 minutes of content, you've got 8 minutes of commercials. Your broadcast hour, you've got, you know, 44 minutes of content and 16 minutes of commercials. Standard. I think that changes network to network.
Pretty standard.
But for the most part, those are standard run times.
Yeah.
That has been standard for a very long time.
Yeah.
This is the kind of event that changes run time. This is the kind of event that restructures the broadcast hour. This could be where shows suddenly become 15 minutes and not 22 minutes.
Sure.
And because of that, maybe there's actually three
shows
instead of there's, you know, either an hour show or two half hour shows in any one broadcast hour. Maybe there's three.
Or maybe there's a 45 minute and then 15
minutes. This is the time where suddenly big changes are possible. And that's one of those things where we should all realize, like, that's actually the implication here of this kind of suit, is you might lose your standard runtime of an episode that all of us are used to.
And what I hope, I mean, what I would love to see, and we're not going to stay on this much longer, but what I would love to see is to see one of these networks just say, okay, this is happening. We're going to try and embrace on our own and figure out the better way. It's not going to happen, but I would.
Well, no, it's
just,
not.
It just
not,
takes one.
Well,
man.
It's not going to happen. It's different. It's different then, because ultimately the benefits don't. The juice isn't worth the squeeze there, because it was worth
it. Short term.
It was worth it for car companies that could come up with hybrids and electric cars, because there's that's building a new market.
Yeah.
This is trying to change a system that's in place. And if you change, if you try to change it and you fail, you just you're just dead.
I know.
You got, so everybody's kind of got to do it together, and that's the thing, because all the of the big broadcasters are joining the suit with Fox, and so you know, that's makes sense, because they all got to fight together. It's interesting to see when big companies team up. And
it is. And one other thing, just as we were talking about this, I kind of thought of something really interesting about the smart glass, tying back to this, and to watch. And when you said the Olympics, I'm like, can you imagine watching the Olympics with a smart glass device?
Yeah,
incredible.
Could
you
be really
cool.
You
can see the stats for all the people, right. The runners.
If you could see, that's a great comment about smart glass in the Olympics. If you could see while you're watching the 100-meter dash and seeing Usain Bolt trying to defend his 2008 gold medal, if you could see his running time in the 2008 race, see the running time of all gold,
in his last
silver
race,
and bronze
what
medalists
his last race was
in the history of the 100 meters.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
Potentially pull up video if you want to push pause and watch the...
I just got the chills
The Ben Johnson, you know, what is it, 84 or 88? The Ben, 88, the Ben Johnson, Carl Lewis, where, you know, Carl Lewis, biggest sprinter in the world, won the 84 Olympics, was beating everybody. Suddenly, this guy comes along and blows
him
out.
Away.
And then not 24 hours later, Ben Johnson's
busted
on steroids.
I mean...
Here's your gold, Carl. Pretty crazy.
Incredible. Yeah.
Pretty
crazy. Just like that ability, watching the Olympics, having that information, just is such an immersive experience that you can have, and just adds to it. So I think that goes on.
So what do we got left on the docket?
Well, my friend, the docket shows us on next. We're out of the tech, baby.
Are we into the food and the music?
The food and the music. We can talk movie if you feel like it. I don't know if we want to aggravate you, because
I'll just say that I feel like the critical acclaim amongst the two Scott brothers always goes to Ridley, and Tony kind of gets left behind. I'm a Tony Scott fan, and I always find myself preferring Tony.
And that is how you are so different from Jamie Duner.
Yeah, I'm different from most people. I think the buddy comedy action flick was defined by Beverly Hills Cop 2. I think every movie that has ever tried to have real action and real comedy on an equal plane
have been
trying to live up to Beverly Hills Cop 2, not Cop 1, which was actually more profane and kind of less.
Let's just all click together in Cop 2.
Cop 2, something really special happened. There was really funny. It was really there's a great friendship thing that's there, and there's fantastic action, and so you know that's tough to do. And so for me, I'm a Tony Scott guy. It's like I love the Tony Scott Denzel films. Tony Scott and Denzel like to make movies together.
You love the orange skyline with the setting sun.
Yeah. I like Top Gun. I like Days of Thunder. I'm not ashamed to say it. I know, you know, if Jamie Duner was here, he would be retching and making horrible sounds. And he gets
so upset.
He gets mad at me for saying that I like those movies. I love those movies. And I think that so for this, I can see there was a lot of, look, the 3D looked fantastic.
By the way, we're talking about Prometheus.
Yeah, we're talking about Prometheus. It, you know, the graphics look fantastic. It was really, it was something to see. I mean, 3D just gets cooler and cooler on a visual level.
When they do it right.
But it just, you know, I think the story just wasn't there for me in Prometheus, and
really,
I don't,
not much went down in that movie.
Most of the movie felt like a long first act. It almost feels like Prometheus should have been a television series. And given the story that they were trying to tell,
you think maybe it was?
I don't think so.
But Lindelof, you think maybe he tried to write it as a TV series first?
Maybe.
I wonder. I just now that you said that, I was like, huh, that's
because it feels
interesting.
It feels like, yeah, I feel like we got to the end of a season at the end of the movie.
Right.
Where there's still so much more that to be explored, where you kind of almost are expecting it. But you're just at the end of the movie. So for me, it was a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, we don't need to go deep into it, but I didn't like it. Nobody we saw it with liked it. I mean, I heard reaction out of the theater, and some people did like it, you know, as I was listening.
Some people liked it, and it put up a big number this weekend. It got to 50, and that's a big opening weekend, but it wasn't...
It was pretty disappointing. I mean, it was, I fell asleep twice.
equally disappointing was the Van Halen concert.
We haven't even talked about this, so I'm
oh, you haven't heard?
You and I haven't talked about this.
So I guess they played they played again last night. They've canceled the rest of their tour. After last night, I don't think they've announced the reason, but I'm assuming it's because Roth and Eddie just
at each other's
hate
throats.
Each other again. But you know,
Tell me about the show. Like,
so the show.
Where was it?
It was at Staples. Right. Staples, June 1st. Look, the musicality of the family Van Halen, which is now Eddie
the son
playing guitar, Wolfgang playing bass instead of Michael Anthony, and Alex, you know, the most unsung, unnoticed drummer, I think, in most of rock and roll, just because he's Eddie Van Halen's brother. And so it's like, he's a good drummer, but he's not Eddie Van Halen. He's not John Bonham. And so by not being John Bonham, he's not going to be a bigger deal than Eddie Van Halen. And so, you know, you're just, the brother, right.
That guy there holding the beat.
It's a family band. I forgot.
He's just holding the beat.
Look, it's actually pretty cool. So the problem is that Roth doesn't have much of a voice left. It's a little sad. He was always a talk singer, I think, for the most part in his career anyway.
But he made it work.
It doesn't really work now. What's interesting, though, is that there's a lot of background harmonizing from Eddie and Wolfgang.
Really?
That was really, really good.
I wouldn't expect that.
But it's in Van Halen. You just don't realize that it's in Van Halen.
Huh.
You got to go back and listen to Van Halen tracks because Ross' vocal was so low and so absent throughout most of the show.
You could hear it.
It was really, really present. And it kind of was an eye-opening, Eddie Van Halen sings backup on a majority of Roth Halen tracks.
Interesting. Very interesting. As far as Roth goes, like, what performance wise, did he have it? Did he not have it?
Roth. He was fun. He was dancing. He had on the leather pants. He had on the shades. They had a great. And I don't know if this is at every show, but they had the screen that they had for the Staples show was basically the biggest and best television screen I've ever seen.
Really?
Because it was normally when you're watching a show, they've got those steel girders that kind of shape the stage that are lighting rigs or a curtain as a backdrop. The entire backdrop was the screen. So it was the full width of the stage,
nice.
Very high
and super high resolution.
Unbelievably high resolution. It was gorgeous. And so they were doing a lot with it. They were changing from black and white to color. They were doing some slow-mo shots of Roth dancing.
Were they kind of almost like creating like virtual scenery?
A little bit. Yeah. But with the band live itself, it's not as if they were showing clips. They were showing
stuff. There was shot of them.
Yes. It was an interesting. So I'm a Hagar Halen fan, not a Roth Halen fan. So it's very interesting to see how the crowd reacts to the new material, because the new material sounds seamless with the old material. It's fine. Like, if you like Eddie Van Halen, if you like,
you'll like
Roth Halen, you should like this stuff. But the crowd reaction is so bad to the new stuff that everybody immediately sits down for the new songs, even if they're not slow tempo.
They just don't even care.
They don't care. They're not there for that, and they don't care. And it makes no sense, because if you liked the old stuff.
When did that album come out?
I think it came out in the fall.
It came out in the fall or very beginning of the year. So it's been a minute.
It's not like it came out yesterday. Right. It's not like they started the tour a month after the album came out or a couple weeks after the album came out and people just didn't have time to warm up to it. What it means is people just don't care.
Yeah.
And that's a little sad, but at the same time, I think that, you know, it's older and also a much older audience, because there's a difference between the age of David Lee Roth Halen fans and Sammy Hagar Halen fans.
Right.
But far and away, I've seen it twice now. I've only seen Van Halen twice in the sort of more modern era. I saw them at Staples with David Lee Roth in 08. I've now seen them in 12. The 5 to 7 minutes you get of Eddie Van Halen doing a guitar solo is really something special. I don't know if I would always want to pay $165 to see 5 to 7 minutes.
But it's worth
it. But I have to tell you, it's worth doing it once to say that you've seen it, because it's something like you'll never see before. Because not only is Eddie an innovator in playing, is he an innovator on a technology basis in what he did with changing or rebuilding guitars and changing around pickups and his style of playing with the finger tapping, that he was sort of the guy really starting out to do that. But the thing that he does that I think is really special when he's soloing is he has a way to play that makes it sound like he's actually playing a string instrument with a bow. And what he does is with his left hand actually on the guitar neck, he's playing the notes that he's playing, and his right hand, instead of tapping, instead of picking, instead of strumming, is modulating the master volume knob. And so he's turning the volume on and off as he's playing. And so it's this water sound up and down motion thing that ends up sounding most similar on a music basis like someone bowing.
Wow,
and
that's so fascinating.
Oh, it is. First of all, it's really pretty, but it's really impressive because he's playing scales.
Like, how the hell is he doing that?
I mean, it's beautiful. I would actually love to see a night of Eddie.
Is there any of that on YouTube? Can people see it?
Like, I'm sure you can find somewhere on YouTube. There has to be Eddie solo, soloing, but it's worth checking out because, you know, and it's one of those things. As soon as it happens, by the time it's over, both times I've ended up with this stupid smile on my face, knowing that I've seen something really, really special. And so while the show itself was kind of disappointing, it's sad because as much as people like to root against David Lee Roth, I've always liked to root for him because I like when people that are larger than life characters like that, I like to see them succeed as opposed to fail.
Right.
So I was hoping that it was going to be a better show. It's a little disappointing, a little sad, but Eddie is Eddie, and I would see that anytime.
Nice.
And then I caught a Jack White reprise. He played the Mayan.
I feel like I haven't seen a show in forever. I'm feeling like
yeah, we got to
see some music.
We got to get you back on. We got to get you back on the horse. But I saw Jack White at the Mayan, which I believe that Jamie Duner a couple months ago reviewed that show. He then played two nights at the Wiltern about 10 days ago, and I saw the second night of that.
And what was like the comparison?
It's always an intimacy comparison. You know, the Mayan Theater downtown is this great old theater with gorgeous architecture.
Sure.
You know, Mayan symbol carvings into dark wood, and it's a 100-year-old place, and it's a fun
place
to be in.
Looks like the Indiana Jones ride at
Disneyland. And he really likes to play there. And so he says it every time he plays there. I've seen him play there with a couple of different band iterations, and he digs it. So that's already makes it kind of a better show.
Right.
It's a smaller venue, which already makes it kind of a better show. At the same time, the Wiltern was a sold-out Wiltern. The scalping that was going on the street was crazy.
Really?
Yeah, people were paying big bucks for these tickets. I think Jack White, in any form, is a really big draw in rock and roll right now. I got to see it. So I've only seen the girl band. He's traveling with an all-girl and an all-guy band, two different bands.
Jamie was telling us about
that. He seems to be playing, I think, with the girl band more. It makes sense, though, because there's one thing that I think the girl band does. Actually, two things. One, it makes you feel mentally like he's playing with the White Stripes because there's a girl drummer.
Right.
You know, and the girl drummer is wicked. She really, really hits. And she's fun, and she's got her drum kit set up almost more like an old jazz, old rock style kit, where everything is kind of flat and low, and she holds her sticks in that kind of old style format,
right?
And really, really, really plays. I mean, she strikes me as somebody who might have been because he's in Nashville now, like it might be a session musician in Nashville.
Sure.
Would be my hunch about all these ladies.
Interesting.
But there's a female black backup singer that plays in the girl band that basically trades lines with him on White Stripes tunes, on Raconteurs tunes, on some of his own songs, that and just generally sings backup. That I don't know how you account for that,
right?
With the guy band, and it really adds something. It's cool to hear her on, you know, Dead Leaves in the Dirty Ground or Top Yourself trade lines with Jack White. That's not something that a Jack White fan has heard before. It's always Jack White sings Jack White songs, not someone else. So that's been exciting to see. She's an awesome singer. And all of those girls, especially he's got a girl playing pedal steel.
Oh, yeah?
The pedal steel guitarist is fantastic.
Are these all Nashville people?
I think they're all, yeah, I think they're all real pros. They certainly feel like it because it's a very tight band.
Yeah.
So I actually don't know anybody that's seen the Guy Band, so I don't have a contrasting review to report. But
I wonder.
But, it was very sold out at the Will Turn to the point where I saw a fire marshal walking around in there. I've never seen
I've never seen a fire marshal.
I always stand at the back, and there was a fire marshal walking around at the back. We were actually having a hard time seeing in our normal back perch up there between the two back bars. There were so many people.
Wow.
You just couldn't see over the heads.
That's crazy. So
it was a big night at the Will Turn. I think I like the Mayan show better just because, you know, he leans into it more there, I think. But also tickets just went on sale for Jack White to play the Shrine on the Friday, August 12th, I think, which is the weekend of Outside Lands. He's playing LA before he goes to Outside Lands in San Francisco, which is amazing because I think he realizes that he can just sell out here anytime he wants. And so why wouldn't he cash in? But I'm a little bummed to be missing him at the Shrine because the Shrine has just been a cool place for us to see
every
shows.
Every time, man.
Yeah, it's delivered a couple of times
for us lately. I think about that place is the way the crowd echo and everything in there.
It's a great sound.
There's just an electricity from not just from the band, but also from the audience.
Yeah, but I also think we've seen two shows that people were really excited for. We saw the Arcade Fire with really emotional crowd, emotional night, and we saw Bon Iver, and those were both people are really emotionally connected to the music, and you actually felt it.
It was like crazy.
Yeah, and so there are a couple. You know, look, there are a couple call and response. Or crowd participation sing along songs when you see a Jack White show, and so when you see Seven Nation Army, people really start getting into it and clap, and I would be really thrilled to get to see the Seven Nation Army performance at the Shrine. I think that will be a special moment.
Yeah.
And as a side note, he's been playing two Raconteurs tracks per night. The first time it was Top Yourself, and now I'm forgetting what he had played. Carolina Drama, which is this great long song on the second album that he does an even longer 10-minute version in concert. But he played Steady As She Goes instead in the encore when we went to the Will Turn. So that was a nice change up of set list. From him, because he's actually been a little more set list uniform on this tour than normal, which is in a way a little disappointing because he's one of those guys that does a pretty good job usually of mixing it up.
Well, he's also like, this is specific for this album and it's a little different.
So it's technically a new band for him to play with, so they don't know every single one of his songs by heart.
He can't just go off and be like, all right, tonight we're going to play this.
Right. Where he knows every single one of his songs. Not everybody knows every single one of his songs.
I don't think we can do it.
Yeah, exactly. I think each band learned 40 songs each or something like that is what he's been touting.
Still.
Which is good, but still ultimately, you know, when you see a 25 song set, there's only so much change up you can do.
Right. Very true.
But so those were the two concerts I have to report of late.
Nice.
And then we have a restaurant review.
We do. And the former Brian Bishop. Well, it's not the former
Brian Bishop, Tech Bacon Emeritus.
There you go. I like it. Tech Bacon Emeritus. Brian was in town for E3, so we got to all hang out and have dinner. And we went to this restaurant called A-Frame in Culver City, Los Angeles.
There you go.
Interesting restaurant, this A-Frame.
Yes,
I would say.
Yes, I mean, I think the food was tasty. The food was really tasty, I would say, across the board. They had they've got some great.
Well, you know what was interesting? The food. So the food's like, I want to call it like a small plates kind of place, but it wasn't really like that. But it was shared plates.
I feel like it's a lot of shared plates, sort of on the appetizer level, but then everybody kind of had their own entree.
Like
you could share the entrees. I mean, I feel like I tasted a lot.
I tasted everything except the burger,
which is great. The burger was good. The burger was good. A little hard to manage, but it was good. It's pretty big.
I'm trying to think of like
because it is actually a double cheeseburger.
Right. It looked huge. I'm trying to think what was a standout for me.
The warm. Hold on. Scroll back up here. The warm cornbread and chicken salad.
Oh, that was amazing.
Let me tell you something, folks. This was.
It was a huge piece of cornbread, and on the top was just this massive layer of this incredibly tasty chicken salad.
Yeah, it's the best chicken salad you'll ever have. So I'll
be honest with you, if I were to have that and not know it was chicken salad, I'm not sure I would know it was chicken salad.
No,
it was such a unique flavor and taste, and it just felt
the cornbread
really
was
fresh.
was an exciting use there, as opposed to just a nice sourdough salmon or something like that. That was a great change up because the sweetness combined with almost the tang that is in chicken salad was really nice.
Yeah, and how like the chicken salad kind of seeped into the cornbread.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so then you got like, even if you were having the cornbread without the chicken salad, you still had the flavor and the taste, and like it was this really unique party in your mouth.
Leaving that one alone. Just going to leave it alone.
I also tried the Cracklin beer can chicken. Was pretty amazing. Like, and
I didn't
it was
have that.
Brian ordered it, and the skin on the chicken was just crispy and flavorful and cooked to perfection. Really,
swordfish tacos were very good as well. They also had some great desserts. I think it was a great place. The one criticism I would make.
I was going to say I wanted to like describe the it looked like.
Well, it looks like an A-frame house.
Right. And it's all wood inside and very open and big, and like you have these just big wood A-frame ceilinged.
Yes.
And all the tables are kind of like picnic table style where you've got these old tables.
And so there's utensils are in, you know, little canisters on the table.
Right.
And
looks like
and
you're at a barbecue.
Yes. You know? But a hipster backyard barbecue. And it's, you know, their tagline on the website is leave your pretension at the door. It's such a pretentious place.
And when we got there, man, it was so loud.
Yeah.
Like, they had the music thumping.
Look, but the music actually was great.
It was good music.
It was really, there was a fantastic hip hop selection playing that normally you wouldn't expect at this kind of restaurant. You wouldn't expect it to be the whole time at this kind of restaurant.
Yeah.
But it was really good. Like, it's basically, there were more moments of people like kind of moving and dancing at the table and at other tables in this restaurant that I've seen in a long time. So it definitely created, somebody knew what they were doing on a music programming level. They created a very cool vibe. But because of the shape of the place, it's very loud in there when it's crowded and when you've got concert ears.
I mean, you and I were on opposite ends of the table. We couldn't hear each other. We couldn't talk to each other.
I was having a hard time talking to who was next to me.
Yeah, me too. And the place is small, so they couldn't have done that. But I wish they could have separated the bar area from the restaurant more, because being in that space, and I think being able to talk with a big table would have been really cool.
Yes, yes.
You know? Because the feel of it was so nice, and like
I think we actually made it work. I've been in places like Mas Malo downtown downtown, whatever.
That's really loud too.
You can't hear in there.
Yeah.
You actually, that place I found to be almost, you know,
it's difficult
truly conversationally inhibitive. This was challenging, but still you could make it happen.
Right. That's true. But I gotta
give it over, you know, it's an overall A rating for sure. Because for the food being good and, you know, hometown Culver City, city of Culver City represent.
You know what, also, we didn't talk about the desserts. There were some good desserts.
Fantastic desserts.
I mean, what I didn't, so there was this, there was an ice cream sandwich, which they had, which I wasn't a huge fan of because I didn't like the ice cream.
I didn't care for it.
It was like this Szechuan ice cream.
Friends of ours really liked it and attacked that thing.
There was a seasonal rhubarb pie with ice cream, which
I didn't get to taste that. But I think
it was amazing, Sammy. It was amazing.
For me, I'm just going to read this out. the Chudon No Meng. Pound cake cinnamon churros with malted chocolate milk and vanilla ice cream. Let me tell you, people, you could go to this restaurant and order yourself that warm cornbread and chicken salad and then get the Chudon No Meng, and you would be
in heaven,
so happy by the end of the night. Those are two fantastic flavor producers. That's it. Yeah,
I think
all
one
you
of
need.
My favorite things of the night was, so the churros get passed around. First, I see Sammy's face when he tastes it, which was just like he was in heaven, right? And they come around and really super like light and crisp churros, square churros, and then you dip it in this chocolate ice cream. I mean, it melted in your mouth, like you said.
It was magical.
But so we all finish the churros, and there's a cup left of the chocolate and ice cream.
Do we have to talk about the fact that I took that cup down by myself? Is that what you're going
to
make me do?
It was all the way on the other side of the table, and I flipped it up to show Sam. He's like, yeah, like, why aren't you already passing that down to
yes,
me?
Yes, immediately give it to me, and I murdered it. And I tried. Look, I assaulted it as soon as it was given to me, and then I felt a little embarrassed and a little guilty, and I let it sit there for about 90 seconds, and then I just went back into it and made sure that it was all gone.
I think I looked away, and when I looked back, it was finished.
That is correct. It was 5 minutes or less that thing survived in front of me, and I passed it away from me, saying,
did you really?
Somebody when it got down to you, I said, somebody better take this, because this is the kind of thing that if it's left in front of me, it's not gonna last. We all shared that thing. I would definitely take one of those down by myself. Oh,
I could have too. It was really amazing. And they had this crazy awesome coffee too.
Oh yeah,
remember the coffee? Was it Vietnamese coffee?
It was Vietnamese coffee where you got, so basically you get this little tray that kind of brews and drips on top of the coffee
at the table,
but it's like a glass mug. So you had what looks almost like it looks like an Irish coffee glass.
That's exactly what it was,
but a little bit smaller.
And in the bottom was condensed milk.
And then so they brew most of it before they come give it to you, but you're supposed to let it sit there and brew. It was delicious.
Coffee. You take the little thing off when it finishes. It's so fresh, and you stir it up, and boom. You know, you could gulp that down.
And I would actually go so far as to say that when we talked about the noise issue, is that this would be a great late night dessert place.
Oh my God.
When we were walking out, there were what I called the smart people
who had just gotten there.
And this was at 11 o'clock, but they were still going. I don't know what time you've got to get in there to actually sit down. But they didn't seem to be kicking anybody out anytime soon.
No.
But to get there late and have
dessert.
And have a bunch of people just sit down at a table and have dessert
idea.
And have this coffee,
it's a home run for this place.
So.
Home run. Brilliant idea. And you know what's interesting, just aside from the food and the atmosphere of this place, is the owner of this place is this guy Roy Choi, right? And he, I'm sure it's been national news, this Koji truck that he... Is it Koji, right?
Koji.
Yeah. It kind of really sparked the food truck rage.
At least in Los Angeles.
And that's kind of where it's kind of been.
Yeah, but he was the beginning. And
like he used to, the Koji truck, they got famous because he started tweeting where they were going to be. And you never knew where it was going to be. And you would follow him on Twitter and they would show up and they would sell
brilliant
out.
Brilliant marketing.
Brilliant marketing. Fusion Asian Mexican food.
It's the short rib tacos that people lose their mind
They're
over.
Incredible, man.
If you come to Los Angeles, you
follow the Koji truck.
Follow the Koji truck. Go get yourself to the Koji truck.
I will put it on the website.
You'll be happy that you did it. It's a home run.
But this guy's fascinating. He's been this meat driven dude forever. He has this restaurant. He has another restaurant in Venice. He has the Alibi Room where he does the
and now that's
the place in Venice that I was
no but and now
he has become a vegetarian, and he has claimed that he is going to quit cooking. And he started like calling out all of these chefs who aren't vegetarians, and like he's been very vocal and crazy about it. Not that becoming vegetarian is crazy by any means, but the way this
turned, when you sell meat,
and he still sells meat at all the restaurants.
It's
which
not
is,
like he's stopped selling meat.
No, and it's really odd because you would think that if a guy was going to do that, great, fine, I think that's cool. There's like so little vegetarian options at any of his restaurants,
including this one, which is
there
pretty
was like
new
two.
But it's the newer one.
Right.
You would think that if you've gone loco and you want to say, I made a lot of money off of meat, so you know what I'm going to do? Not eat meat. You would think that your new joint would have some good
big
options for folks.
Options.
Apparently not. Thank you, Roy. I appreciate that. Look, I'm glad there's still meat. I like to eat meat.
I
don't want to. You know, that's what I do, and that's what she said.
But Roy Choi. I mean, you can read about him online. I mean, he's the biggest thing is he's just been. It's not that he did it. Okay, cool. That's kind of interesting in itself. But he has been so vocal. I mean, and just like really, really out there and vocal about it.
It's interesting.
So, yeah, that's just another interesting world-changing Los Angeles food thing.
special moment, folks. If you could have seen the dance that happened to accompany world-changing Los Angeles food thing, there was
I don't know what you're talking about.
There was sort of a fist-pumping shimmy kind of thing.
I stand, I sit straight in my seat. I don't move the whole podcast.
That's not true. It's not true.
Well, anyway, I think that brings an end to our show. We're rounding it up, winding it up here. Sometimes I can't speak. I don't know what happens.
I don't either.
You know, I don't have coffee. We're just drinking water. It's a little different. I don't know. Jamie's excuses. Not here. I feel off, man.
Excuses, excuses. What are you saying? We don't have rhythm? We don't have chemistry anymore?
We do.
That
we
hurts,
do.
Man.
That's why I bring you back, my that friend. That's hurts. Why I bring you back.
Oh.
Thanks for listening. As always, you can check us out online. We're on Stitcher. We're iTunes. Please, if you're on there, give us some ratings because that really helps the show. You can find us on Facebook. You can follow me at @ScottyG7 and Jamie at Bastard Monkey. I think is that that's BSTRDMONKEY.
Thank you.
And if you feel like following Sam, who does not tweet,
who does not tweet,
he does have a Twitter account.
It's @647 SIXFORSEVEN.
And if you feel like just getting some Zen on your Twitter feed, follow Sam.
And occasionally you will hear.
You know what I think you should.
Jack White is killing it at the Will Turn, and that's about it.
I think you should actually start tweeting blank tweets. And people will follow you so they leave gaps in their Twitter feed.
Interesting.
Could be your thing.
It could be my thing. Ooh, a moment of blank Twitter zen from
Sam. You realize that
at 647.
You realize that, right?
Yes.
You realize, like, blow up huge.
All right.
Okay, I think you should do it.
Okay. Bye, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.